obviously you're not a golfer.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Hi.
Have no place to go.
6:09 in Chicago. Welcome back to winter. It's going to snow today. What? It's going to snow today.
Well, maybe a few snowflakes.
I'm against it, Dave. I want to go on a record right now.
I'm saying on the show today. It's ridiculous.
I'm taking a firm stance against snow on April 10th. Can't have it.
We've had it before.
What the hell is Governor Pritzker doing? I thought he was going to change things.
It just says blustery. It doesn't mean snow.
No, let me go live to the newsroom here.
I'm not afraid.
I'm sorry, the newsroom chair is currently empty.
The weatherman we just heard, I think it was Mike Hammerlink, maybe?
Hammerlink.
Tim McGill.
Hammersmack.
Oh, Tim McGill, yeah, sorry. He just said snow, Mayor.
Well, I'm reading his report, though, and it says cloudy, blustery, colder, on and off rain. That's what it says.
Well, it could be snow.
He wouldn't lie to us.
Might be snow. Thing? All right, Steve's back. Steve, throw your headphones on there. Is it going to snow today?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because Mike Hammerschmack, was it Hammerschmack?
It may have been Tim McGill.
Let's go to the tape. You want to go to the tape?
Yeah, go to the tape.
Okay, here we go.
Blustery, colder, kind of a raw day for us today with a cold rain developing. Looks like later this morning towards a midday. Could even begin with a little bit of wet snow mixed in.
North of the city.
Could see that at times into the afternoon, too. A high day around 41 degrees, but wind chills in the
30s. Wet snow.
Wet snow. There it is. Blustery, yeah. Light.
Shut it down.
The tape doesn't lie.
40?
Yeah, it does snow.
It does,
40.
Yeah,
it actually does.
Really?
And,
yeah.
I thought it had to be 32.
No. Because, see, it's colder in the air than it is on the ground.
Right.
I'm saying it's not going to snow.
It won't stick. I mean, it won't stick at all because the ground has been warmed up pretty nicely, but we'll have it in the air.
We have Denver Lake weather, 75 yesterday, wind chill of 30 today. Today it's going to be 40 at best, and then tomorrow will be 65 with thunderstorms, and then Friday, 40 degrees again.
You know what it is? It's a tease. It was so nice the last 2 days, and it was like their Mother Nature's reeling us in, and then it's like, gotcha.
That's possible. I think Mother Nature may have the same kennel cough that I had.
That could be.
Yeah, and cough is off and on. Yeah,
allergies are terrible right now.
I was really struck, and that's what I'm doing, staring at the window this morning, is the sky looks kind of purple, doesn't it?
Looks like a football fall weird stormy sky. You know what they say, Steve? It's sailor's delight. Sky purple in the morning.
Red sky at
hide.
Night.
The, you know that thing?
Yeah. Purple, yeah, red sky at night, sailor's delight.
Red sky in the morning,
sailor's take
hide.
Well, it's a nice day for baseball. There's two games in town.
Yeah, good luck. It's going to be great if this is the only game all year you had tickets to. Going out today. Gloves, hat.
Well, the Cubs play at night.
That's going to
be a little brisk.
I hope you didn't pack away your winter gear.
Take some of that money you were going to spend in the concourse at the Cubs and just wrap your hands in it.
Never do the clothes switch over till June 1st in this town.
That's all you can say.
Yep.
That's all you can say. It's all you can do. All right, 6:13. Let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Don't get
your kicks. With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
By the way, speaking of snow, we got nothing compared to Minnesota. Minnesota could get 2 feet of snow between now and Friday, and if in fact that's the case and you're traveling to or from there, you're not. So be advised if your travel plans include Minnesota. If you're Lori Loughlin, be advised that you could be going to jail for as little as 2 years and as many as 10. Aunt Becky is in bigger trouble than ever, and her husband, Massimo, because we can't remember his last name.
Giuliani.
Something.
There you go.
Yeah.
Giuliani.
Sandberg's got this new thing now where she just quits on the last syllable of names. Masaba Janulli.
I don't have it in confidence. Oh, Janulli.
But at any rate, the other famous name involved in this, Felicity Huffman, was very sorry. She did the thing she did. Lori Loughlin has not seemed to be sorry at all. Now, that could be advice of an attorney, or she could be just a jerk. We don't know. But now there's money laundering and charity fraud involved. And if that's the case, and we believe what we heard yesterday, prosecutors are saying they will take a minimum plea agreement of 2 years in prison. Yikes. I hope she likes orange, because that's a bad development. All right, let's move on. Item number two.
It's snowing!
That's painful. Naperville native, is. You know, let's just say you're in the Jewel on Route 59 and about 95th Street, and you see James Holzhauer there in a couple of weeks. Don't take him on and say, grocery store aisle Jeopardy. He'll kick your butt. He set a record for one-day winnings with almost $111,000. His four-day win streak continues. Holzhauer is a 2001 Naperville North graduate. Has a natural ability at science and math, and his four-day accumulated winnings so far, $244,365. Dave, when your lovely daughter was on Jeopardy, what was her takeaway?
I think it was about $10,000.
Not so bad.
It wasn't bad. Paid for grad school.
Not so bad. Not so bad. What, did she enjoy the Trebek? Did she like the Trebek?
You know, she had an awkward moment with Mr.
I remember
Trebek.
That. Yeah.
He sort of made an offhanded comment about her career goals at the time, which was to write about music. And
didn't he say something like, oh, that should go well?
No, sarcastic? He said, so you want to be a groupie?
Oh, that was it. That was it.
Yeah.
Not good.
He meant it in a joking way, but it didn't come across very well.
I'm guessing that your daughter's mom was not happy when that statement was made.
She didn't mind it as much as my daughter did.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And her friends at college.
Yeah, I'll bet.
You know, those Naperville North grads are impressive.
Yeah, didn't that where someone named Joe went?
There's been a few Joes there, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone named Super Joe. Didn't you go to Naperville North?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they did.
And a graduate of what year?
2005, my friend.
2005. I think I was the best graduating class, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that, but there have been plenty of people that have.
Yes, there's no question about it. Joe, I don't want to say you're getting older, but your 15-year high school reunion is next year.
And I'm going to skip it just like my 10-year.
Yeah, probably a good call. Hey, Joe, you know what I'm going to be doing this summer? I'm going to go to my 40th high school reunion.
Can I come?
Why not?
I'm with you, Steve.
I went.
Can you believe it, man?
I went to my wife's.
Can you believe it?
My wife's 40th last year, or 2 years ago. That was interesting.
See, why?
Why'd you go?
Because first of all, I was in town, right? So I. It's not like we had to travel.
Did she want you to go?
She did ask me to go.
Because I think the out there is. Listen, these are your friends. Your boyfriends, your people you know, go have a good time.
Oh, is that why you didn't bring Steve Mayer? Because the boyfriends are all there?
No, they were in a different class. Oh. But, no. You know, he doesn't want to go. I mean, it's already planned.
I give you credit, September. Dave, because Dave ended because you didn't know anybody.
I knew a few people.
Oh, you did?
So that made it palatable.
She had stayed in contact with through the years?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a local
area.
Well,
you live in the town she grew up in.
We're local area.
Yeah. Did you just hang out at the bar, Dave?
A little bit, Mary.
Yeah. Might as well.
See, 80% of my small town stayed in the general area, I would say. And I'm of the 20 that didn't. So we go back, and there's only a handful of people that I've stayed in touch with through the years. So I can't wait to go back and have two people look at each other that we hung out in high school and go, and you are?
Got our name tags.
Well, plus your wife is going with you because she went to the same school.
And she's in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, for what?
Her basketball team was at state champs.
Oh, so she's more celebrated at your old high school than you are.
No doubt. Ask her. She'll tell you. Next. Governor Pritzker took an aggressive stance in advocating for graduated rate income tax plan, the plan, I should say, that he's put forth, and said, hey, you got a better idea? Where is it? Show me. In the meantime, Governor Pritzker, you are all welcome here, and we've invited you several times, and the clock's ticking, so please join us as soon as you can. Speaking of politics, next, Benjamin Netanyahu looks like he is going to win a fifth term. He has the best chance of forming a coalition government in the wacky system compared to our system, which is working so well. that Israel is under. And meanwhile, his prime minister head-to-head vote with his former chief of staff is still very tight, and there's about 200,000 outstanding votes, but it looks like Netanyahu will win. By the way, in no small part because Donald Trump campaigned just blatantly for him. And all over Israel are pictures of Netanyahu and a smiling Donald Trump on buildings and things. Trump is very popular in Israel. And I would encourage Trump to run for prime minister there if he'd like to. It's a nice place to live. Next, game changer. Blackhawks pick third in the NHL draft. They had a 2% chance. And was that right? 2%?
Two of getting the number one
pick. Oh, number one.
And it was 8% to get the number to get into the top three.
So that's pretty good. That's pretty
good. Really good.
That's like Lyle Lovett marrying Julia Roberts good. That's not likely to happen.
No. No. This was like similar to the Bulls getting the number one pick when they took Derrick Rose.
Right?
And don't try talking to Dave about what pick we're going to get, because he was squashing my dreams last night.
I wasn't squashing your dreams. I was just saying I think
he's being all realistic. It was annoying.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It should not have been realistic.
That's like that nerdy director that married Christine Hendricks from Mad Men. That's like that kind of lucky, right? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
we're talking to Stan Bowman at 8:40 today, though.
But they have the number three pick. The draft will be in Vancouver on June 21st. And the last time the draft was in Vancouver and the Blackhawks had the number three pick, they came away with a guy named Taves.
Whatever happened to him?
I'm not sure.
Did it work out?
I think he's still kicking around.
Next, Bill Barr testified yesterday to a House panel, today to a Senate. By the way, Washington's got to be just frickin' miserable. I will ask that of our guest, Adam Kinzinger, Congressman Kinzinger, later this morning, amongst other things, including the fact that he's been to the border. So give us an eyewitness view. How bad is it? So Kinzinger will be on later. But anyway, Bill Barr didn't say a whole lot, and he deserves the benefit of the doubt until he doesn't deserve it. He says the redacted Mueller report will be out in a week. Expect this to continue throughout the summer, and expect Mueller to be asked eventually to testify to Congress, because there's way too many questions that have to be answered. And finally, you like ham? Like ham for Easter? Are you a ham for Easter people around here? I'm a ham for Easter person, I suppose.
How about a honey-baked
ham? Honey-baked, yeah.
Spiral sliced, is that what you're thinking? The whole spiral slicing situation?
Yeah.
We got sick one year
with
in
deviled
ham.
Deviled eggs? Mmm.
You got sick on ham?
My whole family got sick. I don't know what was wrong with the ham. Must have been the glaze. We were all extremely food poisoned. It was the weirdest.
What a sweet Sherry story for us.
It was a Christmas thing.
Happy Easter, everybody.
No, it wasn't Easter. It was Christmas season, actually.
Christmas ham made us all sick.
Yeah.
Having said that, ham is still going to be popular this time around. And if you're a fan of Easter ham, a third of all ham sold in the U.S. is sold in springtime, and spiral-cut hams comprise about 34% of all the ham sold in America. We have no pigs to speak on this, but Sandberg, your thoughts?
Well, so I'm not a ham fan.
You don't like ham?
No, I do
too
not.
Too salty?
Like ham. I think I don't like it because it's pink, even though I like my beef rare, so I
hold
don't
on
know.
A second. You're the person that makes fun of me because I don't eat vegetables because they're green, and you're not eating food because it's pink?
Yes, this is true, but when I was in eighth grade, we went and saw my aunt who lived in Grosse Pointe in Michigan at the time, and we went and picked up a honey-baked ham at a honey-baked ham store.
Right.
And there was a fight that broke out because...
Hold on a second. A fight at the honey-baked ham store?
Oh, it can be brutal
it's
there.
There's
the line and you pre-order. And these women were holding their hams in their bags because you get the ham gets put in like a plastic bag that says honey-baked ham. And it was so funny to watch a lot of pushing and shoving with hams, you know, being...
People are serious about those hams. And they're dang expensive.
But they are expensive. And so, you know, I don't eat ham. But we were at my aunt's and the ham got taken out of the oven or something. And then it just sat there. My family's more drinkers, so they never get the food to the table. And I was in the kitchen talking with the women, and I don't know what. Next thing I know, I had eaten the crust off the entire ham before it got served anyway.
The brown sugar glaze?
Yes. So I don't like ham, but I do like brown sugar glaze, and I just ate it all. I picked it off and ate the whole. There was no crust.
How old were you at this point?
I was in eighth grade.
Old enough to know better.
Old enough to know, and I became addicted to it. You know, I was just going to peel.
Did you get busted?
Oh yeah, I mean the ham went from being brown, you know, with pretty glaze to white, fatty looking. You know,
so a bunch of people there had to be explained to them why you.
Yeah, and
like
I think like my dad said, oh, it's still good. You know, he tried to make me feel better.
Covering it up for your daughter.
But yeah, I ate an entire ham crust.
How did that not make you sick?
I don't know. I felt great. I didn't get any food poisoning. But
well, that would have caused World War III at my house if you would have ate the crust and left it for the rest of it.
How dare you?
We would have just
How dare you?
It was so good. I remember. I haven't had it since because it was. I think I have no self-control when it comes to ham crust.
Maybe we could just start a ham crust store.
But the fight was so funny, Mary. You know, you said it's very. It was like people don't want to wait, and it was.
This is why hams were swinging. This is why other countries hate us. That we're having a fight in the ham store. Good God, people!
You know what? I just had a great idea, Steve. In addition to the ham crust, we could sell KFC crust.
Yeah.
So just have like a crust store.
I have also eaten the
muffin crust.
Crust off of KFC. Well, you know.
Chicken pot pie crust.
Yeah.
The crumble crust from an apple pie.
Oh. Right. Just crust.
Yes. The crumble crust from macaroni and cheese.
The crust hut. Crusties. That's it. It's Crusties. We got the name. Now somebody's got to do the store.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
A lot of people asking about ketamine. We asked Dr. Nundra to come back in today with a guy that you may know, John Vincent. John Vincent sings the anthem at, well, everywhere. And he's also a guy that sings at Ditka's all the time, for those of you who've had dinner there. And he's a great guy. So looking forward to seeing him. Masters picks today, staff. Masters picks. Keep in mind, you've been warned.
What? Oh, come on, Mary. I got some celebrity picks, friends of the shows. Some of them are pretty good.
Good. So we'll hear those and see if any of them.
How many are we
completely
picking?
Completely logical.
Three
players.
Okay.
Three players.
Usual people: Justin, Jordan, Dustin.
Well, I'm not asking you to say it now. We'll come up with it later. By the way, we're doing a new tiebreaker this year, Mary, and that's percentage of greens hit in regulation.
Huh?
You're going to make her brain blow up.
Yeah,
well, last year we had something we had to add on at the end, a score or something, didn't we?
Yeah.
No, well, then you have to do it again. You just predict the final score.
Can't we just do how many divots you ruin or whatever?
Yeah, that'd be better. Congressman Adam Kinzinger later as well, Stan Bowman from the Hawks. And we'll play the Gary Cole game again with an opportunity for you to win tickets to come see me with Gary Cole tomorrow night. That will be, where is it? Oh, the Union League Club. I should make a note of that since I have to be there. The Union League Club tomorrow night and the great Gary Cole back in his hometown of Chicago. We're going to show the third episode of Veep before anybody in the country sees it this weekend. And we'll talk a little politics with Gary Cole as well because, you know, he plays Kent the Numbers Man.
And fun questions.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a fun night.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
You said the P word, so I don't want people thinking, oh.
Well, it's the Lincoln Forum.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard, Lincoln was kind of a politician. Dean Richards later, Rick Riley later as well. Rick Riley, the book, The Commander in Cheat, How Trump Cheats at Golf, and Kurt Byram on the Masters himself. All of that coming up. Kurt's brother Tom doing great on the Champions Tour. It's no longer called that. What's it called now?
The Seniors. No,
I know. It's not called the Seniors. They changed it to a dopey name. It's like the Winners, the old guys that won tour.
Yeah.
It's 6:31. Make it 6:32. Back with your headlines next.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
It is 6:42. Happy to welcome Dr. Bal Nandra, just talking about you, in studio, along with our friend John Vincent, who a lot of you have seen sing somewhere or everywhere. He's probably been in your house at some point singing. And we'll talk to John in just a second. But Dr. Nandra, how are you?
I'm great, Steve. Thanks for having us again.
Nice to see you. It's been a little bit of time here. Now, you know that I have been an advocate of ketamine since I met you, because I believe that we need other avenues to fight the scourge of depression and chronic pain. And however this came up, whether it was one of those great accidents in medicine or whatever, this is a great, great development. And then recently we heard about this myth thing I want to ask you about as well. But as news comes out more and more, week by week, month by month, is the skepticism falling away?
Actually, it is. And especially like you just briefly alluded to with the recent FDA approval of a ketamine nasal spray called esketamine. I think that's really allowed the public to understand the fact that ketamine is safe and it is effective, and it's okay to seek a somewhat new and alternative treatment now since it's FDA approved.
We just don't seem to want to deal with depression in particular the way we need to deal with it and treat it the same way we treat cancer and heart disease and every other major condition. Because, frankly, depression probably affects more of us than anything else in this country. Not everybody's willing to admit it. And we need to be serious about it. When we have ways to treat it that could beat other ways, it's great. Because we know that the body seems to find a level with prescription meds. And then you got to change them and you got to try different things. I'm not knocking prescription meds. Obviously, they work. And they're great for a lot of people, but sometimes you need something else.
That's absolutely true. About one in four, sometimes even perhaps one in three people suffer from depression. It's the leading cause of disability and lost productivity in the workplace in the world. And a lot of medications do kind of stop working, and that's just because the brain, just for whatever reason, stops adapting to it. The receptors do. Ketamine, for some reason, does not seem to have that disadvantage, and we've been treating people for 3 or 4 years now with an occasional maintenance infusion, and they continue to be just like they were the day they went into remission.
So what is depression? And by that, I mean, I know we get deep in the medical weeds here, but how is a depressed brain different than somebody who, say, isn't depressed?
Well, it's a lot of it, obviously, in the years has been told it's because of imbalances in neurotransmitters. That's one of the reasons. And, of course, that's why we have serotonin-related drugs out there on the market. Other reasons are higher levels of inflammation in the brain and all the stress and anxiety that people with depression experience actually affects the brain permanently in a physical manner. It actually causes atrophy or loss of function in some areas of the brain over the many, many years. And what ketamine can do is it, which is miraculous, is it activates growth factors in the brain that actually repair and kind of bring those areas back to life. There's been studies that have shown that even as much as a few hours or a day right after one ketamine infusion, there's actually new brain activity. New brain growth.
Yeah, because the body wants to heal itself.
Absolutely. And ketamine kind of kickstarts that process and gets your brain back to a healthier state.
Now, the one thing that people seem to have a little bit of trouble wrapping their head around is when they hear this is originally an anesthetic medication, because the general idea of an anesthetic medication to most people, the layman, nobody's more layman than me, is it's going to level you off and bring you down. And people go, that's what I didn't like about my depression meds. It just flattened me out. Why is this different?
Well, ketamine is a dissociative drug. That's what we call it. And it's a dissociative anesthetic drug. But what it does is, by blocking the NMDA receptor, it puts you into a kind of a dreamy, out-of-body state. And that's the anesthetic part of it all. It's also a very potent for pain control. And that's why it's also effective for a lot of these chronic pain syndromes. So that's what makes it different. So it's like you said, it was accidentally kind of discovered about 15 or so years ago that it was very effective and rapid acting in treating depression. And ever since then, a lot of studies came out proving it over and over again. And of course, the recent FDA approval has only added support to that whole process.
You mentioned that patients after the ketamine, you know, go into remission for depression, which isn't something we usually refer to it as. Is there a maintenance program, or do you take it in addition to some depression meds, or is it a one-step? You do the ketamine, and then you're off all medicine.
Every patient is different, Mary. So some patients, we are able actually to do their 6 infusions and perhaps a few more, and then I may never hear from them ever again. And we do check on our patients long term, and they say, "Doc, I'm doing great. I'm good." And you know, they might come in down the road for a maintenance infusion, or they may not. Other patients do need to be on a maintenance infusion, and you know, we're really careful. I try to do my best to extend that out to as long as possible, so patients don't have to come in. But a lot of patients typically need to come in on an interval anywhere from every 4 weeks, but some can go every few months.
So if you're subject to depression, if you've got that chemical imbalance in the brain, life has traumatic events. The ups and downs of life's happened. So ketamine works. You go out, you're living your life, and then something bad happens. Is that a time where you may need, you know, a maintenance infusion?
Often that is. Life stressors can definitely affect people with pre-existing depression more than they affect other people and put them, you know, back into a bit of a relapse. What's funny, though, is we don't see people typically going back to where they began. They typically are more resilient. In other words, they react better to stressors, as do people with anxiety. They act better to stressors and are more resilient, are able to just deal with things and work through things better, it seems, when they're doing ketamine. And they've many, many patients have told me that.
Who's it not right for?
Well, it's not right for a patient. You really want to have to get better. We always recommend the patients do therapy along with their ketamine. We typically don't change any of their medications, which Mary alluded to. We keep that going. We want them to keep seeing their psychiatrist. I'll communicate with their psychiatrist and their therapist as we need to.
So you're not saying come in, take ketamine, and forget about everything else you've been doing?
Absolutely not. Absolutely okay. not. It's a treatment, but it's kind of it's just something to get you into the right spot so that you can move forward with your life in a better state of mind. But you still need to, most people still need to continue some medication.
They might be therapy.
And talk therapy. They might be able to lower their medications. That happens quite often. But they usually need to continue some sort of maintenance on the outside also.
Insurance getting on board yet?
Well, insurance is covering the ketamine nasal spray that's coming out.
Well, it's interesting. They're going with the nasal spray, but not the injections, which have already been proven to be significantly effective. Well, the nasal spray is brand new. Why would they go that route?
Well, that's pharmaceutical dogma, whatever you want to call it. Well, you know, at the end of the day, it takes millions and millions and millions of dollars to get a drug FDA approved.
Sure. Yeah.
And to get IV ketamine approved would not profit any pharmaceutical company because it is a generic medication that's been around for over 50 years.
So the mist would be more readily available. Volume is what it is, so therefore it's a better thing. Well, look, they have
Johnson
a business
and Johnson has a 7-year patent on it, whatever it is. And
well, some people have a mental block over IV versus, you know, nasal spray. It seems easier.
I think everybody wants it easy.
Yeah.
Well, IV is, and the studies clearly show that IV ketamine is still at least twice as effective as that nasal ketamine spray, according to their studies and according to all the studies that we've done on IV ketamine. So,
because the nasal spray, I'm sure, will develop as time goes on, but they need to know how it's working.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of administrations, and you actually have to go to your doctor's office to get it and sit there for 2 hours afterwards for observation. You can't drive home. So it's still not a quick, you know.
Go to Walgreens and go home and hit it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And only certain clinics, such as mine, are actually going to be qualified to provide it because of the monitoring that we have and the nurses that we have and things like this. Because after all, the FDA mandated that those certain conditions exist in clinics that administer that spray.
I want to talk to John with you in just a second, talk about what it's like as a patient to go through this. And a bunch of good texter questions coming in as well. This is more of a big picture question. Do you know if they're doing any research on stroke victims with rebuilding brain tissue with ketamine? Have you heard of any of that?
I haven't heard much of that yet. I know it's being studied a little bit for patients with concussions.
Okay.
And primarily chronic pain conditions. There are some studies that it could be effective for stroke victims, though, because what it does is actually stimulates what we call neurogenesis. In other words, it stimulates new nerve growth in the brain.
So it's early, but who knows?
It could be. I don't know.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Talking with Dr. Balanandra. And the drug is called ketamine. And one of the questions that came in, Doc, is about PTSD. How does it work on PTSD?
Ketamine works with PTSD pretty similar to how it works with depression. By blocking that brain receptor, the NMDA receptor, what a lot of patients with PTSD have described to us, which is really remarkable and kind of cool to kind of fathom, is that ketamine separates their thoughts from their emotions. And if you think about that for a second, patients with PTSD typically have a traumatic event or thought that triggers a spiraling process of anxiety and decompensation and depression. And ketamine obviously does not wipe your brain free or remove memories or I can't do that. But what it'll do is it'll prevent those horrible or obtrusive thoughts from causing that severe anxiety. So they're just less obtrusive. I recently treated a young veteran from the suburbs, and who'd had issues for a few years from the Middle East and in the war. And he, again, after one or two treatments, he'd just been recently hospitalized and just come out of the hospital, and just after one or two treatments, he was like, "This is just unbelievable. My memories and my thoughts of being in the battlefields and the horrible things I saw, they're still there, but they're just not bothering me as much."
Which is incredible.
It was incredible.
And that brings me to John. John Vincent has been a friend for years, and you guys have seen him sing everywhere, from Cubs games to Ditkas to parties to events here and there. And when people see a guy, a big, tough dude like John, you think, this guy was never bullied. What are you talking about? But you had that.
I was smaller than everybody, and I had this big old head that I have now.
Look at, dude, and I saw you at the meeting. That's where I met you, at the Big Head Club.
No, you look great. Did you just see what happened before? Am I going to be financially responsible?
Right, for the broken headphones?
I put the headphones on, and I pull them down, and I broke it right off.
You know what happens?
I'm like, oh, crap.
What happens? You know, it happens. Thank God Larry Wirtz got a lot of money.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. Sorry, Larry.
But here's the deal. John Vincent, who, you know, is out there singing, entertaining all the time, and, you know, on the outside, you can look like the happiest guy in the world, but you can get very dark very fast. I know I go through it. You've gone through it forever, and you needed help. So you have one of the best psychiatrists that you've been dealing with. And
yes, John Grant at the University of Chicago. Phenomenal.
And he recommended ketamine. And what did it do for you?
Yeah, Larry Wirtz said it first to me, and then I brought it up to John Grant, and then John Grant... This was last year. Uh-huh. Then I started, the depression starts coming. You could feel it. You know it's coming out of
nowhere.
You
can see the clouds coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just like right there.
Yeah.
We're looking out this window, and it's just coming. And Larry goes, "Let me call Dr. Ba. Hold on. Let me see how quick we can get you in there." And, you know, you go in, you have an attitude of, okay, I'm hoping this is going to work. This is going to be great. But that first day, after I had it done, things just looked different for me. Now, I'm not saying that I'm living in la-la land,
right,
or it's euphoric.
Right.
I'm saying I want to go do things now. I don't want to just stop living. I want to keep going. I want to try to do as much as I can while I'm here now.
Yeah.
And before it was like, stay in bed, watch TV, go to sleep. Like, I want to sleep as much as I can.
Right.
I don't want to sleep as much as
You don't want to escape life. You want to live life.
Yeah, I want to live life. And life's not easy, but it makes you clear. It makes things clear for you. It's like, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. You know what? None of us are going to be here forever. We're all going to die. We're all going to, 100 years from now, in this station, be somebody else talking. This
what?
You'll be here.
Somebody told me that.
But, like, it's just, you get real, and you're like, wait a minute. It doesn't really matter in a good way. You know how you say life doesn't matter, and it's always, like, depressive? I say it makes you feel like it doesn't really matter in a good way. Like, don't take the unimportant stuff and make
right,
it so
right,
important.
Right.
It's okay.
So now, I'm not sure with your case, John, but I know, Dr. Nandra, this is anxiety and depression kind of go hand in hand, and sometimes it trips the anxiety,
oh, yeah,
and then that's what causes a lot of the problems.
So, I have OCD, so okay. The worst thing to have is anxiety and depression at the same time, because you're really, really down, and you're really anxious, and that's tough, and because you get these feelings that are just like, it's almost like a cat and dog.
And you think about it as a performer.
Yeah.
Having to go on stage.
Oh, yeah.
If you're in that mode.
There's times at Ditka's, like, I would just be in the office, and I'm telling the manager, I'm like, I don't want to go out there, man. And they've been so good to me there. They're like, just take your time, Johnny, relax. And that anxiety, depression is the worst feeling. That's the worst feeling. That's worse. Give me one or the other. But when they both come, it's like that punch that, you know, Drago gave Rocky, like, when he's going down, and it's like... Yeah.
Oh, Rocky could have used it.
So you've done the ketamine treatments, but you're also still working on yourself, and you're still taking a few other things. It's a whole.
Oh yeah,
it's a full package.
Yes, I've done six already. I'm going to see my doc today. I want to be very open about that. It's okay to say you have a mental illness, because why is it okay to say you have cancer, diabetes, heart disease, this, that? And not okay to say,
amen,
you
know, man.
After I got that tweet from Lady Gaga in the World Series, I looked her up, and I'm like, this woman is like telling her story out there. And I don't know if you saw the picture where it said, you know, in her yearbook, she was bullied, and it says Stephanie whatever her real name is, will never be famous. And then the other picture is her holding the Oscar.
Yeah.
And I go, well, that's why I'm doing the things with bullying for free, because I want to be that person who can help other people. If I have this platform And if it helps.
Well, there's little kids right now. There's little kids who don't want to go to school today.
No.
They don't want to go to school today because there's going to be some jerk who's going to shove them against a locker, who's going to treat them poorly. Yep. They're not going to get stuck up for. The school maybe isn't equipped to handle it. That was you.
Yeah.
You were the little kid that got bullied.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not what you want, because that can trigger a life that goes down the wrong path. And what ketamine's done for you is open up some doors. And I think you made a really important point there. And I want you guys to hang around for another segment, because the point you made is really important. Doesn't mean euphoria.
No.
Life is not about euphoria. As a matter of fact,
I know it came from my family has a history of depression.
Right,
and anxiety.
But what I'm saying is
that bullying really got it.
Of course.
It was more, and it's realistic now.
But if Dr. Nandra came in here and said it's going to make you euphoric, I'd say, Doc, come on.
Yeah.
You never said that. This is going to give you an opportunity to get back to a normal life, whatever normal means for you. And that's what you want. Break those clouds up.
You see the sunshine coming through.
Right?
You do?
Yeah, absolutely. What's interesting is, like you said, ketamine, after these treatments or as soon as you start feeling the response, there is no euphoria. But what it does, like you said, is bring it kind of back to your baseline. The issue that we see that is really interesting is some people don't know what that means, because they have literally suffered from depression. Let's say you're in your 40s or 50s for depression for 30 years. That's since you were a kid, 11 or 12 or 13-year-old. And to compare quote-unquote normal or not feeling depressed when you're in your 40s and 50s compared to, you know, what you felt like the last time you didn't have depression in your teens, is that's not possible. So and that's one of the reasons we really, really want patients to continue with their therapy, because this can be such a dramatic change in people, especially if you've gone 20 or 30 years and all of a sudden in one or two days it's gone. I mean, just think of that. People cry, they get emotional, they don't know what's going on because their depression is gone. And the issue, it's a great problem to have, to not have depression, but it means, okay, now it's time to move on in life. Now I got to find out what to do with my life.
Wait, all your
because
coping,
a lot of people
coping is from every, what you did before.
People have
Doc, can I interrupt
have,
you for
people
a second?
Work.
I want sure. Well, actually, both of you guys hold, because okay. I'm going to come back to another segment.
Okay, cool.
Hang around
cool,
for me, because I want more from you guys in a second. All right, let's do this. We need a break. A quick break, back with the news in a moment. In the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I asked Dr. Ball and John Vinston to hang around for a second. We're talking about ketamine, because I am a firm believer we don't talk enough about mental health in this country. And ketamine is just one of these amazing breakthroughs that doesn't come along more than maybe once every generation. John, you were going to make a point right before the break.
Yes, sir. I would describe it as, like, you know, we all suffer. Life is, like, what did the Buddha say? Like, the existence is suffering, and we all have our ups and downs.
Sure.
The one thing with depression, it feels like that big, wet, heavy blanket that's on you, and it's just crippling. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's really, really, like Doc was saying, you don't want to get out of your house. You don't do anything.
Right.
After this ketamine, it was like I had this backpack of rocks on me, and I took the backpack off, and I could climb the mountain. It's still, and he said, Howard, because he texts me later, goes, John, how you feeling? I go, I have a peaceful reality of life. I know that, you know, life isn't going to be easy, and it's not easy, but it's okay. It's okay. You just get this it's okay feeling. And actually, my mind has become clearer. My thinking has become clearer. I haven't forgotten as many things. I was forgetting when I knew it was bad is when I was forgetting words, Sinatra songs, and I had to stop it in the middle of Ditka's.
That's like walking for you.
Yeah. And I had to stop it in the middle of Ditka's, and the crowd laughs. I go, and they started singing the words, and I'm like, I knew that was because of stress.
Sure.
Right?
Stress and anxiety.
So much stress and anxiety. I actually remember things more now.
You know, what John's talking about really rings true, and talking about OCD as we were off the air, what's ketamine do for OCD?
Ketamine is actually pretty effective for OCD also. What it does is it somehow dulls those impulsive thoughts and reactions. We're still learning how ketamine works in a lot of different conditions, but I have treated people with OCD like John, some people even severe OCD, some people who have just OCD that is just obtrusive type of thoughts that reoccur in their heads. And again, somehow ketamine is through its growth factor stimulation as well as the neurotransmitter blockade, it is allowing the brain to just operate down different pathways instead of those same old pathways that cause these kind of thought and reaction and OCD type of pattern.
It's a detour to get around the construction problem.
Somehow it is. And again, like I said, we're learning more and more about it, and there have not been any large scale studies on OCD, but there are some good studies on OCD, and our clinical experience has actually been very encouraging.
So you said your clinic in particular is in the process of being approved for esketamine nasal spray. That'll happen sooner than later. It's a different procedure. I think if people want to know more about this, they need to call you to set up an appointment to see what works for them, right?
Absolutely. I even though, you know, obviously a lot of people are very interested in ketamine nasal spray, and it is now an option and a viable option, we still would love you to come in, set up a free consultation, and really hear about both the esketamine as well as IV ketamine, and just kind of weigh the positives and negatives of both, just to see what is best for you. Each has its advantages, but at the end of the day, I still truly believe that IV ketamine is far more effective.
One thing you said off the air, and this is not a knock against psychiatrists at all, but you said sometimes they're not always the best person to ask about something like this kind of treatment.
Well, not necessarily not the best person. The reason is purely because many psychiatrists just haven't had patients that have tried ketamine infusion. So sometimes it's kind of hard for them to say, "Oh yeah, you should try it," or "Oh, you shouldn't try it." Most psychiatrists, however, that we get patients from, they typically, so even if they haven't had a lot of experience, they now know that there's enough literature out there that it's probably worth a try for their patient, and at least a discussion. And I'm always happy to speak with any psychiatrist to explain exactly how we do things. I have a lot of psychiatrists actually come visit our clinic just to see how we do things.
Which is smart.
Continuing
education on the part of the psychiatrist.
Yeah, there's a lot of subpar ketamine clinics out there, and at the end of the day, you want to go to a place that does it right, does it professionally with nursing monitoring and private rooms, and there's many, many other things that should be required to be a good ketamine clinic.
And as you said, there's a lot of hope for various things that we don't know enough about yet. ADHD, I'm sure, is one of them. People have asked about gambling addictions, things of that nature, autism. Look, there's miraculous developments that come along every day. Nobody's promising you bipolar 2 will be cured tomorrow or anything else. But this is what John spoke about. And I think, John, you really put it well. This opens the door to what is a more normal life and a more normal outlook on life, and that's what we all deserve. And you can only get that by making the appointment, going in, talking about it whatsoever, or talking about it and finding out whether it's right for you. Now, everyone wants to know about cost. This is not cost. This is not something that's going to cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars and break me. I don't have to sell my house to do this.
No, at least not the house that you currently have. I'm just kidding. ketamine is
it's a nice house.
IV ketamine, as I said, the consultation is free. For WGN people who hear us on the radio, we offer a discount of $50 off an infusion, so it's about $550 an infusion. Again, for the 6 infusions, and the maintenance infusions are less expensive down the road.
All right, so $3,000 in change sounds like a ton of money for a lot of people, but you've been living your life this way for a long time. Are you willing to make that sort of investment into changing your life if this is right for you? You know, I think it's a worthy consideration. Nobody's forcing you to do it, forcing you not to do it. I think you need to think about it. John, you certainly did.
I did. And again, Larry Wirt brought it to me. You know, we were talking about psychiatrists. My doctor, Dr. John Grant, who I love, who I'm going to see today, who was rated one of the top three, and only three were rated in Chicago Magazine, psychiatrists in Chicago, was like, "Yeah, Johnny, I believe this is a game changer, and you go for it." And he said the next week when he saw me, he goes, "I just see a difference in your face and your eyes. You're talking about OCD, and my OCD is pure O. Instead of that dog grabbing your shoulder and trying to like, it's almost like now a fly. You're kind of like, all right, come on, man, just get away. Like, stop. I'm just saying, coping from my experience, yes, sir. I'm saying from my experience, this is what happened. I don't have this where it's making me overthink and jump and scatter all over the place. It's coming to the point where I'm like, wait a minute, take a step back and look. And that has changed my life drastically.
No, I'm happy, man.
Drastically.
A lot of people that love you, and that's great to hear.
Well, thank you, sir.
Next time you come in, you give me a singing lesson.
Let me hear you. Let me hear something.
Unfortunately, we're almost out of time.
I thought you were going to say unforgettable.
Look at you at this hour.
That's what you are.
Well, look at you. You sound good 24/7. Doc, how do we get a hold of the clinic?
Come on anytime for free consultation. I'll be happy to talk to you. Our website is www.ketaminechicago.com. That's KETAMINECHICAGO.com. And our phone number is 844-9IV-MEDS or 844-948-6337.
Thank you, sir. Nice to see you both.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, John. Talk to you soon.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Time for the most valuable person on the planet. Just ahead of that, got a lot of great texts. Also got a couple people going, come on, Steve. Sounds like an infomercial. You know, this is why we got to get past this for mental health treatment. If you're not suffering from any sort of depression or issues, God bless you. You know, count your blessings. But an awful lot of people are, including people you love. And if I had spent three segments talking about a new breakthrough treatment for cancer or heart disease, you wouldn't be accusing me of doing an infomercial. So I look forward to talking about mental health breakthroughs whenever they're possible and anything else that might help you guys and me and the rest of us. Moving on to the most valuable person on the planet. We bring him on right now. He's Jason Hardesty. Good morning, Jason. How are you today?
Good.
Jason, I got pictures of you holding all sorts of doggies. You want to explain yourself, or should I tell people your story?
You can start, and I can fill in what you kind of miss.
You're a UPS driver, and your favorite thing to do is to be positive on your route, and you love taking pictures of great dogs and you smiling along. By the way, you got a great smile, dude. So does your dog friends. You collect these pictures of your people's dogs as you drop off packages, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So where do you live?
New Orleans, Louisiana.
That was my mom's favorite town. Now, why is New Orleans filled with all the good-looking dogs?
I think it's definitely, you know, the vibe that the people have. You know, it's very laid back, so the dogs are very laid back, and, you know, we're just positive people, positive dogs, and, of course, good-looking people.
Two things. First of all, I don't know how you did this, but every photo, the dog is looking at the camera. Anyone who's tried to take a picture of a dog, that is not always the case, so kudos to you. I also
he's probably hanging cheese from the camera. What are you doing?
So basically the owner takes the pictures and I hold the dogs and they're basically saying, you know, calling the dogs names. They do yell treat a lot. So, of course, which gets a smile and attention very easily.
The other thing is you've had to, you're very disciplined. You only allow yourself to take pictures with the dogs on Fridays because this obviously is time consuming and you've got routes to do, right?
Right, correct.
If you see the hashtag Pups of Jay hashtag, that's Jason Hardesty. You've been driving for 7 years. When did this start?
This started about 2 years ago. So my old area was not really family-oriented a lot. So it was very family-oriented. So dogs are very protective because there's a lot more kids. And now the area I'm in now, there's less kids, so the dogs are more friendly, and you know they want to play more than you know protect.
How many dog pictures do you think you've taken?
Oh, probably over 30, maybe 50. I'm not sure.
100.
So yeah, a lot. Too many to count. Yeah.
So my dog, anytime a UPS truck pulls up in front, goes crazy, starts barking.
Good way or bad way? Like, I'm so excited the UPS guy's here.
In a protective way.
Oh, okay.
And there are no little kids in our house or next door. So what would you suggest? How do I get them past that?
You know, it's kind of hard because on my route there are houses with no kids and there's still dogs that come up and bark and just basically how they feel about it. Most of the time it's the truck because they do not like the beeping of the truck. They don't like the loud truck, you know.
Okay.
But if you come up to the door and they see that you're friendly, you're okay, then they're okay with you. But also, sometimes they could just be like, I still don't like you. So it's hit or miss, kind of.
What I've suggested for Dave is that he run out and leap into the arms of his UPS driver to show his dog, Ozzy, that it's okay.
I wouldn't recommend that.
What?
No, Jace, I don't think that's going to happen.
That's not a good idea.
I'm sure people love Jason on his route. I love our UPS driver because I order everything online, and every day that he shows up with a box, it's the happiest day. It's like Christmas year-round, so I'm sure people do want to embrace you because I'm just short of hugging my UPS driver.
Well, I can tell you right now, Jason, you're doing a good thing because you're making people happy. Have you been peed on?
No, not yet. Okay. Luckily.
Yeah. And by the way, you're the only guest I've ever asked that question of. And I've done this for a long time. Listen, there's a lot of terrible things on the internet, and you're not one of them. So that in and of itself is worth a look. Where do we see your pictures?
You can find me at jhardesty on Instagram. And if you just want to look at the hashtag, go to Instagram and hashtag pups of J-A-Y.
Thanks for making the world a better place, my friend. Hold the line if you would. You're the most valuable person on the planet. And we're back with the headlines in a moment. I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday. Gary Cole coming back to Chicago, be in town tomorrow night. Veep, the final season is on, and episode 3 coming up this weekend. You'll see it first tomorrow night if you come to the Lincoln Forum. The Lincoln Forum get-together is a way to talk generally about politics without screaming at each other. And tomorrow night, a little bit of different, lighter, if you will, talk, but centered around Veep and one of the great character actors in Hollywood, Gary Cole, Chicago's own. And I'm going to host sit down with Gary Cole after we all sit down and watch episode 3 of Veep. Where's this happening again? Is it the Union League?
Yeah, the Union League Club of Chicago. And for more tickets and information, go to lincolnforum.org.
Yeah, get your tickets. It's a small, intimate room.
5:30, 7:30.
Yeah, I think we only got, the sellout there is like maybe 100 people.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody come on out and meet Gary Cole. He's a great guy, by the way.
Will you and Gary do any physical shtick type comedy?
We're not really physical shtick guys. Okay. He's very dry, as some people have accused me of being as well. You have often said you can't read my face.
Yes, this is very true.
Mainly
because your hand is always over it.
That's my forehead. But at any rate, it's tomorrow night. So let's play the Gary Cole game one more time. 312-981-7200 is the number. We have a pair of tickets to give away. And we have other prizes as well. But we just need one correct answer. That's all. One correct answer. If you can identify any of the multiplicity of Gary Cole roles. We found, 157 movies and TV show appearances?
Yes, and every morning this week, Joe has been playing those clips in the morning when we're getting ready for the show. And it's quite entertaining because he's so funny.
He's very funny.
Now, if you recall yesterday, somebody who won was an ex-girlfriend of Gary.
I made her an ex-girlfriend. Yeah, she claimed she was.
Yeah, they sang together in high school, so I'm hoping that somebody else wins has known Gary since
I had her in a full-blown relationship. Yes. With him. Yes. Aaron is in Mount Prospect. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm doing just fine. Are you a fan of Veep?
A little bit. I don't watch it as much as I probably should. There's so many good things to pick from, but thank you. Yeah, it's good.
30 minutes of Veep, man. It's not going to take a lot of time, and it's
good point.
Funny.
I will put it on my life list.
By the way, do you remember when Gary Cole was vice president on the West Wing?
Yes.
Right? I mean, he's great in everything.
Cool.
I was laughing yesterday thinking about him as Mike Brady from the Brady Bunch. All right, Aaron, you're going to win here. And assuming you can make it tomorrow night, you'll get the tickets. If you can't make it tomorrow night, just feel free to tell Joe and he'll give you $1,000 instead.
You've already declared her a winner?
Well, she's going to be a winner. I like her chances. Okay. That's all I'm saying is I like her chances. Dawn, hang on. Don't hang up yet. All right. Aaron is ready. Listen, here's the clip.
I'd make everyone say the worst thing about themselves, the most embarrassing, darkest secret. If the other person can stomach you for another second, then maybe you have a chance together. Maybe.
What? That is the least romantic.
I want to do it.
Let's do it.
I'm game.
No.
All right. Now, this is tough. This is tough,
Aaron.
It
sounds animated.
It is animated.
Okay.
It's animated, and it's from a show that's very popular. And Aaron, I'll take a shot. What animated show? Gary Cole's done many voiceover jobs, but what animated show could that be from?
Do you want some
probably
guesses?
Probably not the best.
Okay.
Let's
help her.
All right. Can anybody on the staff help Aaron? What animated show could that be from?
Can I say SpongeBob?
It's not SpongeBob.
I might know.
Do you know?
Steve?
Is it Bob's Burgers?
It may be, Steve. I don't know. You know, you could take Steve's idea, or you could not get the prize. It's up to you, Aaron.
Wait, what was it? What did you just say?
Bob's Burgers?
Bob's Burgers.
Steve said something after that. I'm sorry.
Oh, I said you could take Steve's idea, or you could not win. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying Steve's right or wrong.
I guess I'll take Steve's idea.
Oh, you will.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's Bob's Burgers. Congratulations. You're a big winner.
Thank you.
And give Dawn from Streamwood something for hanging on as well. Steve, well done by you.
You just raised both arms in the air in the newsroom.
Well done.
I'll take
well
a win where I can get it.
All right. So Dawn's a winner for calling in. Aaron's a winner because she's a winner. And I didn't help her at all, as you noticed. 312-981-7200. Texters and callers anytime. All right. Adam Kinzinger joining us next.
Yes.
Congressman Kinzinger. He's been to the border. He'll tell us what it actually looks like in a moment.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
All right, Congressman Adam Kinzinger, proud military man and representing the state of Illinois in the 16th. Good morning, Congressman.
Hey, what's up? Good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on. It's been a while.
You bet.
Now, listen, I want to talk to you about the border, but I first want to talk about the 16th, because everybody says, all you guys talk about is Trump. All you guys talk about is trouble. Talk about some issues. So what do you want to do in 2019 for the people of the 16th?
Well, you know, okay, so we got to keep this job thing going, continue to get better jobs and wage growth. So I think that's on a good track right now. We're seeing manufacturing in the 16th coming back, which is good. Obviously, it's a hub for manufacturing. We got to get past these trade issues because for our farmers, you know, that's essential to get a good deal from China and stuff. And I'll tell you, like, one of the things that's just really kind of burdened me lately, so this will be for the 16th and nationally, I guess, was just the division in this country, the inability of us to debate and talk to each other like adults. It's turned into, you know, there's so much acrimony and contempt that people have for each other. That's actually something that I'm going to do my best to, you know, have good professional debates with people, but try to respect them as people, even if they think differently than me.
Well, that's the thing. How did we lose our way so badly? I mean, if you look at what happened yesterday, just crap being pulled on everybody, and it's just about winning the day. It's not about doing anything for anybody.
You know, and I think what's happened is people have become, just being clear, they've become obsessed with, you know, what's going on in Washington, D.C. We were never intended to be the thing that people paid attention to for all of their waking hours. And now that it has become that, the primary system, so somebody, you know, in order to win their primary, they have to be as far right or far left as they can, and that leads to an inability to talk to each other. If you say outrageous things, you get on the news, you get on national news, and everybody knows your name pretty quick. So think about all the, you know, the famous congressmen, you know, they're all out here saying bombastic stuff.
Right.
And it's become a fame culture. So, you know, and the concern with that is just, again, it's not just that, you know, Thanksgiving dinner breaks up because Aunt Linda voted for Hillary and Uncle Ron voted for Trump. But it's like we can't even do basic stuff in Washington anymore. And that's frightening to me because democracy is based on at least some mutual trust of the other side.
Is that also a leadership problem? I mean, do we need better leadership with more control on both sides?
Yeah, I think it's everything. I mean, I think, you know, Trump's tone obviously has something to do with it. The tone of the left has something to do with it. I think, frankly, we all have to kind of take ownership of this, because what happens is one side will say, well, it's the other side that bears more blame. And then that other side really believes it's your side that bears more blame. So you both legitimately believe that. And the problem is, until you're willing to accept that we all have ownership in what this country's become and what it will become, then we're just going to continue this blame game. Escalating rhetoric does not lead to one side saying, wow, you got so heated in your rhetoric, you have shown me that you're correct. Instead, just it leads to more acrimony. So I think it's going to take, at some point, all of us just to take a deep breath and get back to learning how to debate and not hate each other.
You know, I think you get this more than the people you serve with, and that's sad. Yeah. But that is that people outside the Beltway are sick of it. And you've stated it here, and it's going to come back in bigger and bigger ways. And the midterm turnout was not about Democrat versus Republican as much as it was about, we're just sick of the way you guys behave, you guys being the general term. So is your point of view gaining traction with others?
I think this is a point of view that has to gain traction among just everyday people, because congressmen and women are just a reflection of what voters want, even if voters don't know that's what they want, because we're pretty good at figuring out what it takes to get reelected. And, you know, in my case, I look at this, though, and this is what we need more of in Congress, is I don't see being in the U.S. House as my last job ever. I know that there's going to be a future outside of politics for me because I'm 41 years old. I'm not doing this for another 40 years. And I think when you take that approach and realize this isn't the end-all, be-all, it's much easier to take stands that may not be always politically popular. I've ticked off people in my own party, and I've obviously ticked off people in the other party because I don't really fall into line with what they want.
Right.
I just think that my job is to represent 700,000 people and not any particular party interest.
And I won't even bore you with the question of when you're going to run for Senate, the governor, and for president. We'll get to that later on another call. All right, look, you're a lieutenant colonel. You've been asked to go to the border. You've been to the border. I think Trump suffers from a number of problems, one of which is he's so disliked that even when he's right about something, it's hard for people to believe he's right about something. So we went from statistics that proved that there wasn't a border problem to statistics that now prove that there is a very significant border problem. Now, you went down there and you saw an eyewitness view of what was going on. Is it an emergency?
It is. And you know, my viewpoint wasn't, you know, I threw on a windbreaker and I went to the border and now I have cred. It was, I was actually in the operations, you know, for a few weeks as a military pilot. And so, you know, you get intimately involved in how this stuff works. I came back, I went down neutral on the question of emergency. I came back believing it was an emergency. And what you said is right. You know, the problem is if we could fix immigration, which includes what are we going to do with the people that are here illegally? Well, let's legalize them. They don't have to be citizens, but let's legalize them and secure the border. I think, you know, 80% of Americans would agree with that, but neither side wants to give the other side a win. And where the president needs to do a little better on this is he's just used to messaging to the base, you know, messaging to the, we can't have any more immigrants. That's a legitimate viewpoint to say we don't want any more illegal immigration. But what we need to do more of is explain the fact that there are 200 dead bodies found every year in the Arizona desert because the drug cartel gets paid $6,000 a person to bring them into Arizona, and then they abandon them at the first sign of trouble, and these people are lost. You know, there are people putting their children unaccompanied with 10,000, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 other people and just sending them to the United States. Who would send their child alone in that kind of situation? So, like, for me, I'm compassionate about people, and that's why I think we need border security and a change to our asylum laws. We got to talk about it differently.
Yeah, and also, we can't be the country, no country should be, but we can't be the country that takes children away from their parents and parents away from their children. We got to find a way to process folks in or out of the country. We're the biggest, best country on the planet. We can do it. We can figure out a way to afford to do it. But we can't be taking people. You know, I mentioned this before. If you drop clothes off at a dry cleaner, you get a ticket for your clothes so you can pick them up a few days later. We can't lose kids. We can't lose kids and their parents. It's just idiotic. So there's ways to fix the border that have nothing to do with building a wall, and there are parts of the wall that absolutely need to be fixed. I don't know why that's hard to get, you know, to wrap your arms around.
See, and that's the point is you're talking logic, and we're in an illogical time. And logic says, look, hey, there's, you know, the left has some points in this. The right has some points in this. Let's take all those points and actually fix policy. You know, when it comes to the child separation issue, I agree with you in principle, but we have to figure out then what do you do with a child that comes here unaccompanied? Or how do we find out if a child shows up with a man that's actually that person's father, and you know, versus somebody just using that child as a trafficking, you know, weapon, basically, or shield. So let's figure out the answer to those questions. Let's put a wall where there needs to be a wall, more technology where there needs to be more technology, fix the asylum laws, and figure out what to do with the people that are here. And 80% of Americans would be like, holy cow, you know, Washington, D.C. works again. But we just are unable to even talk to each other without getting angry and walking away from dinner and hating somebody because they have a different political viewpoint.
And isn't part of this, the Central America is a hot mess, and Mexico is not taking care of the people that are literally running for their lives?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, Mexico should be granting asylum to some of the Central America folks. Central America, you know, I was critical of the president withdrawing aid from Central America because that's essential in giving hope and opportunity there. I know El Salvador well. My girlfriend, she's an American, but she's from El Salvador, and I've gotten to know El Salvador well. And, you know, look, we pull aid from El Salvador. All that's happening is the Chinese are walking in and saying, how much did the U.S. give you? Well, they gave us $150 million. Cool, we'll give you $200 million. And now El Salvador is a satellite state of China, in theory, is what's going to happen. You know, we have an opportunity to remake Central and South America with Venezuela, with Cuba, with what's going on in Central America, Nicaragua, and elsewhere. Abandoning it is certainly not the right answer at this time.
And the president needs to stop fighting with everybody and start using some of those deal-making skills he claims to have and sit down with the president of Mexico and saying, you got to fix this, and I'm going to help you fix it to the best of our ability so we don't have our border overrun by people desperate thinking they have nowhere else to go, because it's not going to work that way.
And look, this country needs to grow more than we're growing by our birth rate. So we need legal immigration,
right?
And we probably need a lot of it.
Great to have you on. I appreciate it. And if
anytime.
People want to get to hold of you, it's Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Easy to find. Google him up. I'll tell your friend Pat Brady you said hello.
All right. Thanks.
All the best.
It was nice that Rokan let us use Congressman Kinzinger.
Well, considering how many people he's stolen from the show, I don't even consider it using him. Yeah. Let's see. It's 8:03. By the way, when are you moving to afternoons? Still in negotiations?
Yeah, we're not announcing it yet.
Okay. We'll come back with the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and Steve next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, hold it. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, hold it.
Back in the expansive luxury that is the Channel 9 newsroom, Dean is back from his worldwide travels.
Coast to coast.
You know, Dean, much like a big hit book with big celebrities on the cover slugging the book, talking about how great it is, we get a lot of notices for Moron Entertainment. Hoda Kotb says, I never listen to Savannah talk when the morons are on.
Really?
Yeah.
George, she's full of wine, though, most of the time, though, isn't she?
Not at this hour.
Oh,
no. Nope. George Stephanopoulos said, I wish I was a moron, too.
A lot of people think he is.
Gail King says, what does Oprah think? I'll get back to you. There's a lot of people out there, Dean.
You know, Gail King, right after her R. Kelly interview, wanted us to sit down and talk with her.
Right. Right. And yell at her. Well, I'm glad you're back. We have a busy, busy list. Camila Cabello, ooh, andale, 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 is in the news.
Pardon me.
Camila Cabello is almost as fun to say as Ana Balaval.
That's true.
Sarah Gilbert's in the news. Nipsey Hussle is in the news. Brad Pitt's in the news.
That's the Brad Pitt story is my favorite story of the day.
Okay, well, we're going to get to all of that. All of that.
And more on?
And more.
And more on?
And by the way, brand new part of Moron Entertainment, plenty of free parking. So that's just another added incentive for you to be sure you listen every day to Moron Entertainment. A lot of shows aren't offering that. We do.
You know what we were thinking of? We decided on the free parking, but what we were thinking of is free samples of pizza. Because, you know, when you're in the grocery store and they're given free samples of stuff, there's nothing better than that. And nothing attracts a crowd.
Like, no question.
Free stuff at the grocery store. So we were thinking of that. Should we give away free pizza while we do the segment?
That'd be a great idea.
Or I
love the
parking.
People that approach the free samples, Dean, and they lean over the little cup and they're like, no. Like all judgmental on what the free sample
ew.
Is.
Ooh,
like,
tuna noodle casserole
right, no,
on a cracker.
You.
No way.
Here's why the apt electronics people are better than anybody else. And this is my opinion. App does free cookies.
Right.
And they do
home baked
free cookies
out of the oven,
but they do them down a bit of a hallway that's like 20 feet out of the main way. Now you go to Costco or even like a Whole Foods and the samples are all over the store and you can't get by the people who are lining up for the free samples.
You gotta maneuver your car. Excuse me.
Right.
Excuse me.
Speaking of apt, I'm getting a new dishwasher tomorrow.
Which is the point of the segment, as you know.
They already sent me the tracking link so that I can start tracking it.
God, send it to Dean so he can keep up.
How many cookies did you consume in the purchase of that dishwasher?
I didn't, because I ordered it from the website. And I'm disappointed. I know. I missed out.
They should send you free cookies.
They should.
For that.
And many boxes of popcorn. Yes.
Popcorn.
But the rest of you could learn a lesson from apt. Put your samples in a place that's not going to obstruct traffic of people that aren't lining up for your samples.
And what's the clever thing about it is that they do have it in a different section of the store where it doesn't cause congestion. But the second you walk in the store, all you smell are fresh baked cookies.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's like Walking Dead. People walk in and go, cookies.
Smell
cookies.
Smell good. Must buy that kitchen.
Right. I told Steve Shapiro, I said, just rub cookie dough on some of the expensive stuff. And he said, yeah, we don't need your help. He said, don't call anymore. All right. We'll come back to all that show business stuff in just a second.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720. Oh, oh,
oh, oh. Back to Dean at Channel 9 as we continue. On entertainment.
You know, I was out of town, both in New York and L.A. this past week. You know, at O'Hare Airport, when you get off at different levels in the parking garage, they have different theme songs from sports, different teams on different levels. Fifth floor is now the moron entertainment music.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't know when they changed it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't know when, but I was very surprised.
That's very, very, very good. And that's a real strong statement by them that they're supporting America's favorite entertainment program.
Right. That's one thing you want to hear right before you get on a plane is something about morons.
Well, as long as they're not your pilot. Hey, the Lori Loughlin thing, are you hearing that she's being cocky about this?
Yes.
Or is that just talk?
Yes, definitely. She's being... I'm not sure cocky is exactly the right word, but when you compare her certainly to Felicity Huffman, who was being extremely apologetic, extremely remorseful, both in her actions and her words. And I don't know if you saw online someplace, they posted the letter that she wrote to the judge, which was just extremely apologetic of how she realizes what a terrible mistake that she made. Lori Loughlin, on the other hand, is signing autographs when she's coming in, posing for pictures when she's coming in. She did not plead guilty like Felicity Huffman and many of the other parents did. I mean, maybe she feels like she didn't. You know, that's her prerogative to not feel that way. But she is being a little obstinate about the whole thing and had more charges thrown at her yesterday now of laundering money in addition to the lying and the original charges of falsifying documents to get her kids supposedly on the UIC crew team.
She seems just short of saying pretty people should get more stuff. She seems just short of that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work out. I don't think that's a smart strategy.
I'm sure you guys were doing this last night, Dean. When I was reading something about Lori Loughlin, I took to my Instagram and I started...
Totally. So far, I'm with you.
I started down a path of looking up all the Full House / Fuller House castmates.
Yep, did the whole thing.
And I used to follow Candace Cameron Bure, or however you say it. And then I decided I'm annoyed by all the Full House people. So I've unfollowed them. And I'm done with them now because Lori Aunt Becky has sent me down a path of not liking anybody.
Yeah, that's
and I've
dark.
Now unliked everybody. So.
Even Uncle Joey?
Well, you know, I didn't follow him. So
Stamos is a good guy. Stamos and I are confused for each other a lot, so I have a soft spot for him.
You have the same hair, that's why. So anyway, I unliked all the women that I was following on the show because now I'm over it.
Steve, you're friends with Dave Coulier, right?
Yeah.
From stand-up days, and I know he's been on your show.
Yeah, much time, sure. Yeah, did stand-up with him. Now, in addition to that, other people that I'm confused with often, well, Brad Pitt.
Steve's going to be called to court, by the way, also.
Yes, and I am
testifying.
Because he helped Aunt Becky's kids get into college.
That was a trick question to get you a link to with Dave Coulier.
I was actually Aunt Becky's kids' crew coach.
If you look carefully at the picture, Steve is at the front of the boat with a megaphone.
Can you see that photoshopped in? How great would that be?
You as the cat. What is it? The coxman?
Yeah, the coxman.
Excuse
me? Yeah, that's what she said. All right, so Brad Pitt.
Appeared before the Los Angeles Board of Supervisors. I guess it would be like appearing before city council basically. There was a bill that was being considered by this group for the restoration of an art museum there. And citizens could, you know, they were entitled to get up and speak before the board. So Diane Keaton shows up to speak before the board, and so did Brad Pitt. But as you will hear, being a VIP didn't matter. You have a certain amount of time, an allotted amount of time, and I guess Brad Pitt thought, I'm Brad Pitt, I could talk as long as I want to. Turns out that wasn't the case at all.
Just, I can't say enough about him. I see my time's expired.
I know. It gives me great pain to say, wrap it up, Mr. Pitt. It kills me to say that, but wrap it up.
We actors suffer from verbosity. I understand the decision you make is going to take a leap of faith. I ask you to take the leap of faith in Michael Govan's vision for the collection, in Peter Zumthor's vision for the future, and how we move through this museum, and I think it's going to be a gem for everyone. I'm gone.
Thank you. We only do one take here.
Wow. She wasn't taking anything from him.
I love that. That was great. Ever since he dumped Jennifer Aniston to try to get with Angelina Jolie, you know, he deserves some bad karma in his life. I mean, if you're ahead of the line with, you know, you're dating the hot girl and you go, she's not hot enough for me, you need to go to the back of the line. I think that's karma.
I love that I don't know who the person was who was chairing that meeting. One of the board of supervisors. I love she was polite, but it was forceful. Wrap it up.
She's like, shut up.
Wrap it up, Mr. Pitt.
Hey, I got one for you. The Grease prequel. All right, here's what I know about Grease. First one, very entertaining, a classic.
Yep.
Second one, unnecessary, don't need to see it.
Huge bomb. Only made, I looked
made
it up
$8.
This morning. It literally made $15 million total.
Oh, wow.
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they want to do a prequel. What? John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John in middle school? How do you do a prequel to Grease? They were in high school.
This is, well, you know, think about the story, Summer Nights.
Sure. Summer Lovin' had me a blast.
So that's the name of the movie. It's going to be called Summer Lovin'.
Oh.
And it's going to be a prequel of what happened during that summer.
Before, out on the beach?
Before they wound up at the same high school.
Well, they diddled on the beach, didn't they? Didn't they beach diddle?
Well, that's what we're going to see for 90 minutes in this movie.
Do you know who is going to play Sandy?
They did not.
Olivia Newton-John.
Any actor.
No, she...
As the grandmother.
I want to see a 65-year-old Olivia Newton-John and a 70-year-old John Travolta play middle schoolers.
I want to see 65-year-old John Travolta on those bleachers doing that dance. Oh, well, tell me more.
I've always craved wanting to see how that summer went, and I'm not kidding.
There
so this is I. This is I'm the audience for the preview.
That's going to take so much time away from Instagram for you.
I know. I will be unfollowing Fuller House.
Camila Cabello?
Is been
Camila Cabello.
It's more fun if you say Cabello.
Camila Cabello, who is a hugely popular singer. She is Spotify's most downloaded solo female artist of all time.
Yeah, me too.
A pretty big, huge deal. Has been named to play Cinderella in a new movie that is going to be coming up next year.
And Sarah Gilbert's leaving The Talk.
She is leaving The Talk. She was one of the originals on the show when it first went on the air back in 2010. She says between being on that show and being on The Conners.
She's tired of talking.
Not only starring in the show, but being one of the producers, she has no more words to say. She also has three kids. So she's, I give her a lot of credit.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of getting her life, you know, prioritizing
kids are
her life.
Kids suck, yeah.
So. Yeah, and somehow deciding that kids are more important than work.
Dino, continue with the Nipsey Hussle story on TV as well as you continue, and we'll see you tomorrow.
I will see you tomorrow.
Headlines next, 720 WGN. Thanks for listening to the Steve Cochran Show every morning. I appreciate that very much as we continue live from Chicago, America's greatest city. Oh, the world's greatest city. Yeah, beat it.
Chicago takes Jonathan Toews, Winnipeg native, the third overall pick.
Could you let to Toews, Blues line to Kane, over the line to the right circle, put it in front for Toews, and she just scores!
Stewart. The Hawks lead 1-0.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
His mother told him someday you will be a man, and you will be the leader of a big old band. Many people coming from miles around to hear you play your music in the sun.
Well, in a summer where we're expecting some Hawks news, it started early. Last night, the Hawks beat the odds, and Karnak the Magnificent called it all the way. General Manager Stan Bowman joins me now. You know what I like about that reference, Stan, is that very few people can remember Karnak, but you're old enough. You remember Karnak.
Yeah, I'm not too old, but I do remember Karnak.
So Stan had a dream, and keep in mind, the last time Vancouver had the draft and the Blackhawks had the number 3 pick, they picked Jonathan Toews. You had a dream this might come down this way.
That's right. This is the first time the draft's been back in Vancouver since 2006. And I did a couple weeks ago. I had a dream that we ended up picking third again. And here we are. That's the way it ended up. It's pretty exciting.
Dave, what did you tell me? An 8% chance of getting the top 3 pick?
Well, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Stan, I think it was like 2.5% chance of getting the number 1 pick and 8% chance of getting into that top 3. So that is
correct.
Yeah, so
pretty nuts.
Right. Yeah, those are pretty tough odds to beat. What sort of a difference is there when you're talking about the number 3 pick versus the 12th pick, which would still be a good player for you?
Well, yeah, we were looking forward to this draft because we do like several players, and we were confident we would get someone we liked, but it's a totally different ball game when you're at number 3. I mean, it's a game changer. We're in a spot where we're going to get a special player, and you know, there's some really impressive players this year. They're elite talents, and now we're going to be in the position to choose one of those guys. So it changes things dramatically, and it puts us in a great spot. I can't tell you how excited we are.
So I've been a big proponent of the Jack Hughes family. I want them in Chicago. And I was wondering, if are you just going to stay at 3, or are you thinking about doing some deals to move up?
And tell us, even if you can't, tell us.
Well, I guess you never rule anything out. I think it's pretty unlikely those teams are going to be willing to trade down. That's probably more the way it's going to go. But even at number 3, we're going to get a really important player for us. So this is a big, big jump to go from 12 to 3.
Well, let's make some news here. Let's get real specific. Stan, can you say safely to me, Steve Cochran, on the Steve Cochran Show right now, that your pick will be a Canadian, an American, a Russian, or a European?
I think, Steve, you nailed it there. We are definitely going to choose someone in that category.
Right. All right. I knew we'd make some news. Dave.
Were you looking, Stan? I mean, the process begins long before June rolls around. And for an extended period this year, it looked like you would be drafting pretty high or have a better chance in the lottery based on where the team was. But then, of course, teams started winning a little more. So does that kind of change your perspective going into the draft, where maybe you were looking at the players at the top of the draft, then maybe you weren't, now maybe you are again?
That's exactly right, Dave. We had a tough start to our season, obviously, and after 30-odd games, we were down at the bottom of the standing. So we have been following the top players pretty closely all year. And then, in the last month or two, when our team rebounded, we were in a different position. So we started following some other players as well. But for a long time, we were really zeroing in on those top few players. So we've got a good comfort level. That's the good news. There's still time left to do some scouting. And, there'll be the draft combine. You get to interview these players and see them perform on their fitness testing and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff to still review, but I think we have a great baseline right now of where we think these players are.
I know every player is different, but in some cases, guys are able to make that jump the first year. Patrick Kane did it. Jonathan Toews in 2 years. Henry Yoki-Haru, who you drafted 2 years ago, we saw him play this year. Is it more likely, if drafting at that point, that you would get a guy who could make an immediate impact on your team?
That's a possibility. You know, if we were up 12, I would say that's not a possibility. I think, you know, there's probably a couple guys every year in the draft that are able to make the jump. You know, it's usually not more than three or four. So looking at who the players are this year, that's certainly in the realm of possibility. We're not so focused on that. That wouldn't be our primary motivation to draft a player. But when you're looking at a guy at third pick, you know, you're going to see what happens, and he might have an opportunity to help us next year.
So do you go because it's number three with the best player available because that's the cream of the crop, or are you still filling a need, say, at defense?
Well, we've drafted a lot of defensemen high the last couple of years. We've got some high-end prospects coming on defense, so we don't have to draft a defenseman just for that reason. I still think you have to get the best player. You know, this year is probably more forward heavy at the top end of the draft than it is on defensemen, but there's some really good defensemen as well. So we're gonna do our job and dive in, but I think you guys got to take the best player at that point, and we'll see how that shakes out.
Now, goalie usually comes later. You get a young goalie like this kid we've had in Rockford most of the year, who's, I think, going to be a superstar. And you need reps. You need time to grow. I don't know that you'd necessarily pick a goalie in the draft, but are there any goalie stars out there?
There's a really good goalie in this year's draft as well. So that's always a possibility, too. You know, you're right. There typically is not as many goaltenders that are chosen high. You know, you can name them on one hand over the last 10, 12 years. Carey Price is one, and maybe Marc-Andre Fleury. That's about it. So it does happen from time to time, but it's typically a forward or a defenseman that gets chosen at the top of the draft.
It's a good problem to have.
That's right.
I think you let the Zamboni drivers pick.
That's a different way to look at it.
Well, I mean, they got a good view of the ice, pal. I mean, they're seeing a lot of hockey. I mean, don't count them out. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you got to go off the board sometimes, right?
That's right. Who's more off?
I don't think Stan's buying into this.
Who's
Steve?
More off the board than me? Listen, I'm really excited about it. It's a great way to start a summer of Blackhawk news. So, congratulations on the good luck stroke, and let's go make the most of it.
Thanks, Steve. I agree. We're really thrilled and can't wait to get to June and pick that player.
All right, there you go. Stan Bowman, general manager, your Chicago Blackhawks. You want to explain who that family is that you love?
Oh, Jack Hughes, he's a prospect. They're a family that have, how many kids do they have? Three, Dave, I think? They all play hockey.
Three or four.
They're all sweet, and there was a piece, I'll share it on our Facebook page, of them growing up. Their family dedicated to hockey, and they're like every Canadian hockey family. They're nice and kind and good people.
Except they're American.
I'm sorry, that's right. Yeah,
they are like Canadian hockey families.
They're really. He was talking last night. He's just a nice.
Yeah, he was. He was on. They had him on stage last night.
The entire family looks like they're off Baywatch.
They are nice looking, but that is not why I am. I know that it sounds like I'm.
Listen, you're shallow in other ways.
They're way too young for me to even be looking at them that way. They're cute kids, though. He's a nice looking hockey player.
I thought maybe you were more into the dad.
Seems like a very polite kid.
Well, and the mom played hockey too, right?
Is that right?
Yeah, they're athletes, and I think you could explain it better, Dave. But I don't think people realize when you win so many cups. It affects you're picking 31st every time in the draft.
Yeah.
And then it's really difficult to build and replenish when you're, and you know, is that, that's a bad, easy or good problem to have, I guess.
Well, you're winning, it's super cups, expensive, but because when you have to replenish by getting players that are already established, you're going to pay more.
But yeah. But look where the last time they drafted, where they're going to be drafting. There was in 06 and 07, they drafted third and first, and they got Taves and Kane.
Not so bad.
So
that means we've been good for so long that we're not getting good drafting.
And as Mary said, then you're drafting at the end of the first round every year.
I think the only answer is you got to get the right guy, and you got to get rid of Taves or Kane. One of them's got to go.
Stop it.
You got the Zamboni drivers making the picks.
I'm a big picture thinker. You know that.
I know you are.
Those guys are friends of mine. I like them both, but one of them's got to go.
I think that's probably why last night after they did the Stan Bowman conference call, they had the Steve Cochran conference call
that
everyone was able to dial.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Where the rest of the league goes. Steve, call in. Give them your ideas.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
remember that story I did last week on drunk shopping? People that get drunk and then they shop late at night?
Yes.
I pulled some of the highlights. Here's some of the highlights from the drunk shopping story. We don't have time to get into detail here, but here's a few. Kentuckians spend the most while drunk shopping. Everyone in Kentucky spends an estimated $740 a year drunk shopping. The majority of respondents, 80%, have made a drunk purchase at some point in their lives. Amazon, by far, the number one place for drunk shoppers. The most common drunk purchases are clothing and shoes, movies, games, tech, and food. In that order, by the way. I thought food might be number one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, except Amazon?
Well, that's true. 7% of survey respondents have gotten buzzed and bought software. Dude, you know what I totally need? I need Windows 99. Is that out yet?
No, it's more like I'm surfing for something I need to see, and boy, that software might help me find
Right. I can't see anything right now. Is there any software to fix that? Millennials are the generation most guilty of shopping while tipsy, followed by Generation X and then baby boomers. Women are slightly more likely to drink and shop than men, but not by much. 80% of women, 78% of men. Of survey respondents who listed their profession, writers are the most likely to drink and shop. You know what it's called, by the way? It's called Drinking Prime.
I like that.
Yeah.
Me too.
Netflix and chill, Drinking Prime. People who work in sports are most likely to splurge and spend the most while intoxicated.
Ooh, Dave Ennett.
And some of the weirder purchases listed by drunk shoppers include a full-size inflatable bouncy castle, 200 pounds of fresh bamboo, the same vest that Michael J. Fox wore in Back to the Future, and a splinter that had been removed from the foot of former NBA player Olden Polynice.
Wow.
Oh, that's a weird list. My sister does a little tipsy shopping, and so I've sent her gifts, and then she doesn't know they're from me, and she'll send a picture. Look what I ordered drunk last week. And I'm like, I sent that to you. But because she does so much drunk shopping, she assumes
she doesn't even know.
She doesn't remember.
She's got a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next week on Michael's Corner, he will bring in more crap he finds on Amazon and also other crowdfunding, ridiculous crowdfunding efforts.
And I might add, when you are drunk shopping, eBay is also pretty good for that.
Oh, yeah.
You can actually get involved in like a bidding, a little bit of bidding war, and if you're working on a bottle of wine.
Hey,
you know?
Hey, I need that bouncy castle. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
I'm loaded today.
Oh. This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit.
And that's is that Bing Crosby? How'd you book him? I mean, he's been dead for years. That's a good job by you, Super Duper.
Has never been found to this day. But it went
You know, if you don't play golf, you may scoff at what I'm about to say. But I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating when I say honesty in golf is a measure of you as a man or a woman. It's why being a caddy is such a great job as a kid, because it teaches you about honesty and about dishonesty. Golf is the only game played by, well, as many people as it's played by, where you call your own penalties. You have to live by an honor system.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Riley, one of the great sports writers of all time, funny guy, very funny guy, handsome devil, too. Rick Riley joins us now because he's written a book, I love this title, too, Commander and Cheat, demonstrating a little bit more of the depth of this president of the United States or the shallowness, depending on which water hazard you're playing. Good morning, Rick.
You know, I always say golf is like bicycle shorts because it reveals a lot about a guy.
Yeah.
By the time you're done reading this book, you're going to know more than you wanted to know, I think.
Well, let me just go through a few things here. I'm going to make these as non-golf as possible so people who don't play golf will get it. Why do caddies call Trump Pele?
Because he kicks his ball so much. He kicks it out of any long grass, he kicks it out of bunkers. And that, for those that don't know, that's completely illegal. This is not soccer. You don't get to touch the ball until it's in the hole. And by the way, he doesn't putt out either. He can go weeks without hearing the ball hit the bottom of the cup.
You know, maybe he doesn't like the sound. Maybe the sound disturbs him. But here's the thing. Gimmies are a regular part of golfing with your buddies, but there's a phrase called inside the leather. The idea being if a putt is close enough to the pin that it's inside the leather of the grip of the club, your putter that you're playing, or even if you want to cheat a little more, a driver, then it's okay. Does he play super long clubs? Because I hear he's taking 20-footers.
Oh, his friendship zone is the size of a Winnebago, but not for you. Like he's like, oh, I would never miss that. And he does what we call rake. Like he rakes it back to him really quickly, but you have to putt yours out because he's a lot of fun to play with. Everybody says that, but he has to win, and he's trying to cover a 2.8 handicap, which, again, not to get too golfy, but 2.8 is really, really good. Just to give you perspective, Jack Nicklaus right now is a 3.5. So if Nicklaus plays Trump, Nicklaus gets a shot, if you can imagine that.
I can tell you right now, listen.
What he really is a 10.
If he's a 2, let me tell you something. If he's a 10, I won the Masters. I've played golf with Donald Trump. And I played golf with Donald Trump 10, maybe 15 years ago. Not at the age of 72. So a lot of guys lie about how good or how badly they play. But I think one of the real breakthroughs in your book, again, it's called Commander and Cheat, Rick Riley, is Donald Trump does believe in global warming. He believes in global golf warming.
He does. I mean, the book isn't just about how he cheats at golf. It's about how he fakes championships he never won, how he pretends his courses are the best in the world when they're not even ranked in the top 200. But he tells people climate change is a hoax invented by the Chinese. Okay, knock yourself out. Except right now, as we speak, his lawyers are suing this little town in Ireland called Dunbeg to be allowed to put up a 2,000-foot wall 10 feet high to protect his course from rising sea levels caused by, quote-unquote, climate change. So he doesn't believe in it when he wants votes. He does believe in it when he's trying to protect his golf course.
Rick, in writing this book, do you come across any comparables as far as other presidents who've golfed and were rules bent at all
cheating their ass off
on their behalf?
Yes, I played with Bill Clinton when he was president, and he cheated in a completely different way. He didn't get to play much, so he'd be lucky to play once every month, and so he wanted it to last forever, and he was confounded by the game, so he had 24 clubs in his bag, which is 10 over the limit, and then he would hit his shot, and then he said, I'm not taking a mulligan, I'm just practicing. So the Secret Service started calling them Billigans. So he hit five or six of these Billigans, and they'd go try to chase them down. And because he, you know, I would say he was like a 14, 15 handicap. And then he'd try to play his first one, but it was very hard to remember which was his first one. And every Secret Service guy wants to be the ambassador to Switzerland. So they'd like, here it is, Mr. President. But he wasn't trying to ruin your day. He wasn't trying to beat you
right, call you
a loser. Whereas, well, I have a couple instances here where Trump not only throws his ball out of bunkers and stuff, throws his ball, has his caddy throw it out of woods and stuff. One time he took Mike Tirico's ball and kicked it in the bunker because he's always way ahead. He's got this supercharged cart that goes 50 miles an hour. So he always gets to all the balls before you can even come close to getting there. And he kicked it into the bunker because he wanted to win the hole.
This is a good story. If I have this right from the book, Tirico hits par 5 and 2. So he's got a 10-footer for eagle. And everybody sees the ball on the green, right?
Well, no. It's a blind par 5. Tirico hits the shot of his life. And he's practically running up there to see what it looks like. But Trump's already up there. And when he and the caddy get there, go, here's we're going to have a putted eagle, man. I've never made an eagle on this hole, whatever it is. It's not even on the green. It's way, way left in a bunker. And they're like, and they have to check the marking to make sure it's his. Like, this can't be mine. But it is his. And then he dumps one and leaves one in the bunker, comes out, three putts, makes a six or seven, whatever it is. And then he finds out later Trump kicked it in the bunker.
Caddy saw it. Another caddy saw it and told him.
Yeah.
What a sweet, sweet guy. Who has won more club championships, Kim Jong-un or Donald Trump?
Actually, it was Kim Jong-il that was the fantastic golfer who shot a 38. with five polls in one. But Trump, I mean, that is really phony. But Trump says he's won 20 club championships. And this is the whole reason. This is the whole reason I wrote the book, Steve. I was retired. I was loving life and playing piano and stuff like that. And I kept reading where he was telling crowds during the campaign, vote for me, I'm a winner. I've won 18 club championships, now 20, apparently. That's against the best players in the club. I don't take shots. Can Trump close? Trump can close. But he forgets he told me how he does most of them, which is whenever he opens a new course, he plays the first round by himself and declares that the club championship.
It's ridiculous.
So I started looking into it, and it turns out he won one when he was playing a course in Philadelphia, and the course was and the championship was held in Bedminster, and he called in and said, what won? And the guy goes, 75. And he goes, make me the winner. I shot 72 up here.
It's just amazing.
They had to take this guy's name down and put his up, and then it turned out he shot 82.
It's crazy.
It's craziness.
Does he pay off his bets, or does he pay the fees he owes?
Well, first of all, he's very generous. He pays your fees. He covers the caddies. He buys the cheeseburgers. All that matters to him is that he wins. Now, sometimes, like he came out here and bet a guy named Sam Farmer, who works for the LA Times, covers football. And they're in this game, and Sam took $10 off him. And Sam said, I was trying to get the two fives out of his hand, and he wasn't letting go. It was the weirdest thing. I thought they were going to rip. And so when he finally gets the two fives out, Trump goes, it doesn't matter anyway. I got a white Rolls Royce and a hot girlfriend, so I'm fine. And I heard that line a few times from people who beat him, which is a very rare thing, except when he's on television. When he's playing in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, he did that 7 times. The Lake Tahoe celebrity thing, he did that 3 times. And there he doesn't break an egg. He never made a cut at Pebble Beach. He never finished in the top half at Tahoe. Now, we know one time he had a porn star and a Playboy model with him, so I can understand he might have been tired.
Busy. He's got other things to do.
He's busy.
Yeah. And one of the real tell-alls is you certainly knew Mr. Palmer. I had the pleasure of meeting him and interviewing him many times. Arnold Palmer, one of the great guys, and a guy who lived by a code. And he really, as I understand it, is not or was not a fan of Donald Trump.
Well, I don't know that so much. I just know that I remember Arnold saying to me once, I never do a business deal until I've played 18 holes with the guy.
Right.
And I said, why? And he said, because in 4 hours, you can't hide who you are.
Right.
If you're going to cheat me on the course, you're going to cheat me in business, and I don't want any part of you. So he always played. In fact, I played around with a guy, you know. And so I just think if Arnold Palmer was alive today, he would not be in business with Donald Trump.
Yeah, I've talked to a couple people that knew the king who said the same thing. Listen, the book is great. It's classic Riley because it's funny, it's insightful, and it should scare the crap out of you. It ought to be a movie. Good to reconnect, man. I'd love to have you on again, but thanks for doing this.
That was great fun, man. Thank you, Steve.
There you go. That's Rick Riley. And again, it's called Commander in Cheat.
Who's writing the book about your golf game?
Right now, we're talking to several authors, and all of them are very, very interested. Yeah.
Maybe Dave can get Teddy Greenstein to do it since he has the Northwestern connection with him.
I know Teddy. I like Teddy. It'd be more of a pamphlet, I think, than a book.
I remember Teddy did a column about a round of golf with you, and he was writing that every week for the trip.
That is my favorite golf picture ever, and I can't find it. I should read. There's a picture of me, oddly enough, in a bunker at Medina, and it's a splash of sand. And the ball coming out, and you see my face behind the ball as the ball rises through the sand. It's a really cool picture. Now, what people don't know is the ball actually rolled off the green on the other side, and I think I made a double. But it's a cool picture.
So, yeah. But anyway, if you love golf, get the book. If you just want to read about the, and you know, again, if you love Trump, you're not going to believe any of this. But this is who he is. And if you want to read something that's entertaining about the lunacy of Donald Trump, get the book. Again, it's called Commander in Cheat, Rick Riley. I got to get that for my mother. She used to love Riley in Sports Illustrated.
He is very good.
Yeah, so, I like the fact that this pulled him out of retirement.
Letters in the sand.
All right, we got to do our picks. But start, if you would, Sandberg, with some of our celebrity friends of the show who we asked, who are they picking in the Masters? Who'd we hear from?
So our first celebrity is your mother.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy, and Dustin Johnson.
Okay.
The second celebrity we heard from.
Nice picks, by the way, Mom.
Yeah, Dan Rohn.
Mm-hmm. Dan Rohn,
gentlemen. He knows a little something about golf.
Yes, he does. He's a really good player.
Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau. And he wrote it really funny. He wrote D with a bunch of E's, Chambeau. He's being comedic in his texting.
Well, that's typical, Rohn.
My sister's dog, Biscuit Sandberg.
Oh, Biscuit made picks.
Another celebrity.
Yeah.
He's going with Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, and Justin Thomas.
Okay, solid picks, Biscuit.
I saw a thing that Justin Thomas, he relaxed on a vacation with his parents in the Bahamas, so he's feeling really good before this tournament.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I thought that not a lot of adult men go on vacation with their parents.
It's a nice thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know he's young, but he's not 16.
No, it's a nice thing.
Probably my favorite celebrity picker is Annabelle Laval.
Annabelle Laval!
She went with Ricky Martin, Chris Hemsworth, and Joe Maglione. How do you say his name, Mary?
Mangiliano.
Yeah. Oh, boy, I'm happy to hear those picks.
I know. So I think those are great picks. So
do any of them play golf?
When I asked her originally if she could do her picks for the Masters this weekend, and she said, that's basketball, right? That's a...
oh, Annabelle Laval.
Yeah.
So. Well, that's good. All right, now let's go to you.
My picks?
Yeah.
All right. Mine are John Rahm,
mm-hmm.
Tommy Fleetwood,
mm-hmm.
and Tony Finau.
And we'll need a winning score.
Six.
Minus six.
Yes.
Mary Vanderbilt.
Oh, man. Okay. I was picking that John Rahm, too.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go with Tiger. Is he playing or is he injured?
He is
no, he's playing.
Okay. And I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. I just like it. Lucas Bjergard.
Oh, Lucas Biergarten.
Well, that's not how you say it.
No, it's Biergard. Lucas Biergard.
Biergard. Supposed to do the old.
Biergard.
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 Okay.
Lucas Biergard.
What's your score, Mayor?
Oh, we have to do that too?
Yeah, yeah. Just pick a number.
Oh, so it's got to be a minus number?
Yeah. More or positive. It's up to you.
-3.
-3.
Okay.
Pretty solid pick. Dave Enick.
Rory McIlroy, Justin Rose, and Mark Leishman.
Oh.
-10.
Mark, nobody Leishman. Picks Leishman.
Who's that?
That's a good pick. That's a sleeper. That's
you
the big,
10?
Tall Aussie.
10.
Okay.
That's the big, tall Aussie. That's who that is. Steve Rizanich, your picks.
I'm going to go with my my annual perennial tip picks here. Carl Spackler, Jack Nicholson, and Happy Gilmore.
Those
and,
are all solid.
-3.
Yes.
-3. Okay. Well, somebody else has -3. We'll put you down.
How about -5?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's not going
somebody
to.
Else has -5.
Who
we're going to put you
I
down
minus
for
three.
We're going to put you down for -25.
Okay, that's good.
Should have picked Bob Barker too.
Wait, it's Happy Gilmore, Carl Spackler, and who's the other one?
Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson, of course. I mean, how could you
sorry,
not know
sorry.
That? The great Jack Nicholson. Super Joe.
Yo, I'm taking Rory McIlroy.
Rory McIlroy.
My paisan, Francisco Molinari.
Yes.
And Tony Finau.
You know, Francisco Molinari plays a Bettinardi putter. That's double Italian.
Now we're talking.
Molinari on a Bettinardi. Huh?
Forget about it.
Dave and I were talking about off the air that last year, Tony Finau on the par 3, he dislocated his ankle, remember?
And kept playing.
I know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Crazy. Today's a par 3 contest, by the way. Winning score was what?
Even par.
Even par. Look at you.
Michael?
Yes, so I picked some names, my favorite players, not just because I like the sound of their names. I went with Bubba Watson.
Bubba Watson.
Siwoo Kim. And Jimmy Walker.
All right, dynamite. And yeah. And what's your winning score?
I'm going to say 27.
27 under?
Yeah, my favorite number.
Favorite number. All right.
Wow. Never lets me down.
Somebody's going to get hot.
All right, Steve Cochran, we need you.
Rory McIlroy. Tiger Woods.
I love those collarless shirts, by the way.
Tommy Fleetwood. Tiger's going to be wearing collarless shirts all weekend. 8 under par.
All right. I look forward to another contest where Steve Cochran is knocked out early.
Is that Tommy Fleetwood from Fleetwood and Mac?
Or yeah, he's Fleetwood Mac.
Fleetwood and Mac?
He's the Fleetwood Mac guy.
And when does this thing start?
This thing starts tomorrow.
Oh.
The par 3 contest, which is great, which our own friend Dr. Most has caddied in before.
Mm-hmm.
The par 3 contest is actually today.
Is that like a dunk contest?
No, not even close.
Oh.
And there is bad weather throughout most of the weekend at Augusta.
Today, I think, is nice.
Today is okay.
No one who's won the par 3 has ever won.
Ever.
The Masters.
Ever.
Which is weird.
Did you guys hear the story about the Black Labrador Retriever that swallowed 5 golf balls?
I don't know the story.
It was a couple days ago. I don't know. I can't remember where it was at, but they had to do surgery on the poor dog. And,
oh, it swallowed five golf balls.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Well, I hope they were Titleist. Yeah. It's 9:32. We'll come back with your...
I was kind of hoping that was a setup for a joke.
Yeah, I thought it was going somewhere, too.
It's a pretty sad story. The dog's okay, though.
Dog's okay. Well, that's the main thing. 9:32. We'll come back with your headlines next on 720 WGN.
Obviously, you're not a golfer.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Well, look who the cat dragged in. My friend Kurt Byram is, far as I'm concerned, the best golf analyst there is. Been getting it done now for several years since he left the tour. And not only is he a handsome devil, he does a fine job of calling the game.
And
this week is Masters week, and he's off this week.
And you know what?
And
I'm
he agreed
do?
To get up.
He agreed to get up to join us to talk about the Masters. And a lucky listener right now, seventh caller, is going to get a golf foursome at the Preserve at Oak Meadows,
award-winning
golf.
They just redid it last year.
Yep. Learn more and book your tee time at dupagegolf.com.
Waffle and sausage.
We are giving... Oh, that is awesome. Orion is having a waffle and some sausage for breakfast. We are giving away a foursome for each of the golf majors all season. So thank you to Preserve at Oak Meadows. So seventh caller right now, you get to win.
I'll take open mics for $200. Here's Kurt from the Golf Channel and NBC Sports and NBC Sports Net. Would you like a waffle and sausage?
I'm pretty hungry right now. I'd go for eggs for sure.
How you doing? Good, man. Thanks for getting up on a day off.
Ah, no problem. Yeah, the 6:40 one, the first request for 6:40 a.m., that was a little early.
That was the one you laughed off?
A little bit. I mean, that means I had to get up at like 6:15 just to talk to you, so I wasn't going to do that.
No, God, you can call me anytime. Why would you get up early?
Right.
All right, so let's start with the obvious elephant in the room, and his name is Tiger. Is he ready to win at Augusta?
I mean, I think he's certainly capable of it. I mean, I don't see any reason why not, because he's got his health back, and he's obviously played some good golf in the last 6 to 9 months. So I don't see why not. I mean, he almost won the Open Championship last year at Carnoustie. You know, he had himself in a position to do it and then won the Tour Championship at the end of the year. And I don't think he's been that far off this year either. So, you know, and then when he gets to Augusta National, of course, you know, that just brings back all those memories of all the wins that he's had there and how he went about doing it and getting the job done. So I certainly would consider him one of the favorites to try to win.
How important is that at your level to have that familiarity with winning? You know, whether it's the Bob Hope Desert Classic or the Masters. I've been here, I've done it. How big a deal is that?
I think there's a lot to it. I think, you know, we talk a lot about it on the air. It's, you know, a guy that won 3 times on the web.com tour has that experience now. He knows what it feels like to be in that last group and have a chance to win. And when he gets to the PGA Tour, then he's certainly more capable than he was before he got all those wins on the web.com tour. It's the same for PGA Tour guys. The more they win, the better they are at it when they put themselves in that position. But golf's a funny game, you know. You just don't know when it's all going to be there for you. And, you know, you're going to take advantage of the game that you have that's really ready. But this is a little different week because I think guys like, let's say, Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia, now that he's won there, there are a few of these guys that I think can elevate their game. Spieth's even a better example, Jordan Spieth. He's had a terrible season. He's played really poorly. But I really think now that he's at Augusta National, having won there, he's always in contention, it seems like. I think it's going to bring back that little spark that he needs, and I think when he gets on these greens, he'll putt a lot better as well. So I wouldn't count him out.
He could turn the entire thing around. I mean, you know, he's in a full-blown slump, and if he gets it going and keeps it going, I mean, the whole year could turn.
No question about it. I mean, and don't think he can't do it, because it's like he keeps saying the right things. You know, he's really positive. You know, even last week at the Valero Texas Open, you know, he had it going for a while. And then he shot 42 on the front nine on, I believe it was Saturday. And it was like, wow, who was that? But he bounced back with 31 and then played okay on Sunday. So you never know what's going to come out of him right now. But I think Augusta National will bring out the best in him. And, you know, if you're looking for somebody, I don't know what his odds are, but if you're looking for a little bit of a long shot, he would probably be your guy.
Ricky Fowler is the best player never to win a major, and everybody talks about him. Is it his turn?
Well, I mean, you know, he's in that mix. I mean, I think it's a top-heavy mix of players, and Ricky's certainly in that mix of guys that can do it. I think he can hit all the shots that are required. He putts really, really well day in and day out. You know, under the pressure of trying to win the Masters, that'll be interesting to see if he can continue to do that. But, again, I mean, he's one of, you know, probably six or eight guys that I would put on that list that are probably going to win this week.
Dave, say hi to our friend Kurt Byron.
Hey.
Kurt, good morning. Dustin Johnson has been among the favorites the last few years going in. He's got one major, and it hasn't come at Augusta, even though he's been on the leaderboard there. What's kept him from winning there?
It's his putter, and he'll be the first to tell you that if he putts well this week, he'll have a chance to win. If he doesn't, if he putts average, this is one week where he can't. He's not the only guy that's going to just overpower the golf course and win. He's done that before, where he's finished middle of the pack in the putting stats and still won the tournament. But this isn't one of those weeks. These greens are a whole different animal than just your average week. So I think it's the putter, and I think he could be in the mix. I like a couple of other guys better than Dustin Johnson. I'd put Rose, Rory McIlroy. I'd put those two in my mind. There, I would have them ranked a little higher as a chance to win the Masters this week than Dustin Johnson, only because of the putter.
You know, you got to be there to understand how special the place is, but also how visually different it is than what you see on TV, even with HD television and the technology that exists now and the animations. The elevations at Augusta are unbelievable. And if the weather comes in this week and we end up playing if they end up playing 36 holes, some crazy development like that on Sunday, which the Masters probably wouldn't do. They'd probably push it to Monday. But if they played 36, you got to walk that course twice and it's wet.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. The elevation changes around there are pretty dramatic, and you're right. It's really hard to fathom what they're like unless you're standing on the grounds, and it would be a lot of work. I just looked at the weather forecast. It sounds like it's going to be warm in the 80s, but there's a good chance of thunderstorms, looks like to me, Saturday and Sunday. So it could get a little wet around there. But, you know, even if it rains, they have – you know, it's Augusta National. They have a sub-air system throughout the golf course, not just the greens, and they can just suck that water right out of the fairways and the greens, and they can get that golf course firmed up in no time. Give them a couple hours, and they can just suck all of that water out of the golf course and keep it dry. So they'll keep, as long as there's no electricity in it, they'll keep them out there.
There's three interesting side stories here. One of them is you know, a guy that a lot of people always had high hopes for, and then he annoys you, and then he comes back, and then he annoys you again. I think we all remember the shot at Medina where Sergio Garcia and Tiger were going to be the rivalry forever. Well, Sergio's a punk. He's a whiny little punk, and he continues to burn whatever goodwill he has. He seems like he's in no mental shape to even compete. Am I right?
I don't necessarily disagree with you, except for the fact that he has won there, and you know he'll be in a good state of mind only because he's at Augusta National. But he does do he undoes a lot of goodwill that he has built up. I mean, the antics over in the Middle East this year, and just, I don't know, just sometimes it doesn't seem like he can get out of his own way. I just don't understand it. I mean, for a guy his age who's accomplished as much as he has, won as much money as he's got, I mean, he's got a pile of cash, too. So, yeah, I don't get why he lets that stuff get under his skin and act like he does sometimes, but... You know, it's hard to explain. I don't know.
Has Patrick Reed repaired the damage he did last year at the Ryder Cup to, you know, be ready for this?
Yeah, I think, you know, Reed's been struggling a little bit with his game this year. He, you know, just recently, just a couple weeks ago, he brought in David Ledbetter down in Tampa to come and look at his swing. Reed's capable of it, obviously. He won last year, so we know he can get the job done. But I just, when a guy's a little bit struggly and brings in a new teacher all of a sudden that he hasn't been working with, you know, close to the start time of the Masters, that would concern me a little bit. So he's not really on my radar this year like he would have been last year.
And Brooks Koepka lost as much weight as he possibly could for an ESPN The Body photo shoot, and doesn't seem like he's been right since, which is crazy. He won two majors last year. Is he right?
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. I haven't talked to his
coach. By the way, I went through the same thing, Kurt. I did the same thing for
I know,
ESPN
we all go
The Body.
It, right, Steve? But, I, you know, that can it can definitely change things swing-wise, losing a bunch of weight like that. So I don't think it was the best idea that he's ever had. But a lot of times, if you go back to the majors that he's won, he hasn't really played well, and then all of a sudden, boom, he wins the U.S. Open twice, you know? So I don't know what's, you know, even the PGA, leading up to the PGA, I don't think he really had any really high finishes or won any tournaments before he won the PGA last summer, and then boom, there he was winning the PGA. So that's kind of the way he does it. He doesn't do a whole lot in your regular week in and week out tournaments. He shows up at a major and there he is, you know, winning the tournament. So it's kind of hard to predict what he might do.
So who's going to win?
You know, I'm going to go with Rory McIlroy. I mean, we're all such huge fans of him, Steve. He's so well-spoken. The talent is incredible. Sooner or later, he's going to get it done, and I'm going to go with him this year.
Thanks for getting up, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, it's good talking to you guys.
NBC Sportsnet and NBC Sports and the Golf Channel. It's Kurt Byram. Bill, I meant to tell you, when I was in Charleston, South Carolina this weekend, I was at a place called Wild Dunes.
Wild Dunes?
Wild
yeah.
Dunes Resorts. And there were about 50 tennis courts right next to my room. And they were all full. And I thought, if Bill were here, he and I would play. But the courts were full.
The courts were full, or else we would play.
Otherwise,
you could have called me. I would have flown out. We could have played.
The Volvo women's tournament was there last weekend.
Right.
He was surrounded by tennis greatness.
Tennis ladies.
And he didn't... He didn't attend.
But that's I did go hurt. To the night before, I went to the Volvo Women's Tennis Spelling Bee.
Oh, you were at
that? We have to spell the top women's players' names.
That's not easy.
No.
That's harder than the scripts.
A lot of Volvos.
What was the
Volvos.
Toughest one for you?
Martina.
Oh, that's not that tough.
It's a silent P.
Oh, there's a... Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Madison Keys is the one that won, so you'd be able to...
I knew that. Yeah. Totally.
Steve, ask me what the one thing I know for sure is.
What's that?
That somewhere, Orion is enjoying sausages.
And waffle.
I love the fact that anywhere at any time, Orion can go, waffle and sausage, and it just appears.
Right. How does he do that?
He's very powerful.
That's magic is what that
Your
is.
Your producer, Jasmine,
very
was
powerful.
Just saying, I want to live with Orion. I can just order what I want.
Yeah. It just appears.
Yeah.
Congratulations to an unnamed listener who won a foursome at the Preserve at Oak Meadows to pagegolf.com. So there you go. What are you doing today?
Giving away
Jim in Berkeley.
Yes, Jim in Berkeley.
Jim in Bartlett.
Yes.
Doesn't even know the guy in Berkeley.
Right.
Right. Waffles and sausages, Steve. Right.
Waffles and sausages.
Yep. Right. We are giving away...
Do you know if Bill Curtis and Orion Samuelson had a baby?
Right. If.
It's let's first stress words, if. Its first words would be, goo goo, da da. Yeah, it would be. Yeah.
That's quite an image.
Yeah.
I mean, well, now for the next few hours, I will just think about that.
Actually, if Orion Samuelson and Bill Curtis had a baby, it'd be weird. That's really the
I don't think so. Yeah. I think we've progressed to a point where that's not weird anymore.
You're right. What's
I think
weird?
It's fine.
There is no weird.
We're giving away Todd Rundgren tickets. I've invented a game called Famous People and Their Pets.
Famous People.
And Their Pets.
And their
love
pets.
That game.
Yeah, Dave, you're going to please play along.
So you'll identify a celebrity.
Yeah.
And you'll ask what kind of pet they have.
You will have
give
to
give me one.
Name.
Try it now.
You want me to give you one?
Try it now.
All right. Hold on, Steve.
And people always look like their pets.
Who look like their pets, that's tomorrow.
Here's the key to this.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a clue about a celebrity, and the type of pet they have rhymes with that celebrity's last name.
Got it.
All right? He played Batman 3 times and his pet.
Played Batman 3 times and his pet. It's George Clooney, because George Clooney has an emu.
So you're going to go with George Clooney and his emu.
I was thinking Clooney and baboon.
Can I do it?
Yeah, Steve, take it.
Christian Bale and a snail.
Yep, that's the winner.
Is that right?
Yep. I would have also accepted whale, but I was preferring snail.
I got to tell you right now that it always annoys me when Bertrand's right about anything.
How often does it happen?
He nailed it.
All right, have fun. I'll see you tomorrow.